So yeah, I changed the title to make it easier for you to have to remember.
Is it still the same talk or?
Yeah, it's still the same talk. Yeah. I changed the talk to make it easier for me to remember. To sort of set the stage, I want to highlight two related constructions in geometric representation theory. Which are related but sound somewhat different. So the first one is a category called D modules on G mod G. So here G is a Lie algebra, and you have its the corresponding algebraic group acting by conjugation. And so this is some category of D modules on the Lie algebra with some equivariance for G acting on G. So essentially you're studying some systems of differential equations, systems of ODEs. On G with some symmetries. So I'll say a bit more about this in a sec. Well, okay. On the other hand, there's something called the character variety of a surface, and in particular of a two torus. So this is. So moduli space of representations of pi 1 of your surface into some group G, and you quotient by the conjugation action. So for the two torus, we can think, so pi 1 is just Z cross Z. So this is, we have G cross G. Sitting inside here, we have something called the commuting variety in G, so just pairs of commuting elements. And then we take these, and we quotient by simultaneous action, simultaneous conjugation on the two coordinates. So this is a variety, or better said, a stack. But it's in somehow in commutative algebraic geometry, and this is an object in representation theory. So somehow A, I guess this is probably familiar to most people, but I want to think that A controls. In some sense, the representation theory of the universal enveloping algebra of G via sort of Harishchandra's theory of characters. So, I mean, this is just motivation, so I won't go into a lot of detail. But if you have infinite dimensional representation of the universal enveloping algebra, you'd like to naively associate a character to it, traces. But of course, if your representation is infinite dimensional, then the trace doesn't make sense as a function. It is well defined as a distribution, and the theorem of Harishchandra says that that the classes of these representations that one wants to study, they have this equivariant structure, which just captures the sort of conjugation invariance of a trace. So this is where this came into being. So B. Arises in several sort of TFT contexts. So these character varieties in two dimensions, like Dijkgraaf-Witten theory. Okay, so for today I'm going to focus attention on surfaces. When I talk about different dimensions, I'm still talking about the invariance on surfaces, but I'm talking about the dimension of the field theory. So in Dijkgraaf-Witten theory, you're counting some point counts or maybe Euler characteristics. In 3D theories, you have, rather than some number, you have some vector space, which is maybe some sections of some line bundle. What I'm most interested in is in the 4D theory. And in the 4D theory, you are associating to a surface a category, which is a category of quasi-coherent sheaves on the character variety. Okay, so this is the sort of one categorical march towards higher and higher field theories. Okay, and from our point of view, this is where the story is the most interesting, because all of these have sort of some sort of quantizations. The story of these quantizations, in the essential way that we'll see, it really stops here. This is sort of the most general place where at least I know how to quantize these constructions. Okay. So this 4D theory, I'm not super comfortable with these words, but since I'm at the Perimeter Institute, I should say that this is a form of Kapustin-Witten. So 4D, n equals 4, super Yang-Mills theory, but with a topological twist. So that is, there's a sort of four-dimensional quantum field theory proposed by Kapustin and Witten, which is, they have this beautiful paper explaining that a lot of structures in the geometric Langlands program can be understood as some symmetries in some physical systems. The field theory that they define is not topological; it's a quantum field theory. But you can sort of, there's a standard procedure called topological twisting, and they show that sort of once they suggest that one such twist will give you an honest topological field theory rather than just a quantum field theory. And that's this one here, okay. So those are the two things that I wanted to talk about. So there's sort of two related questions that we could ask about these two theories. So first of all, for this theory, we might like a theory of these character sheaves, these character D modules for quantum groups. So if we replace the universal enveloping algebra with the quantum group, we want some sort of category that should fill in here. And on the other hand, it was shown in the early days of these character varieties being studied that they carry symplectic structures. Symplectic when the surface is closed, and Poisson in general when it's open. So it's a natural question to try to quantize these varieties. But you want to do it in such a way that all of this sort of topological field theory stuff comes along for the ride. So you want to quantize not just the individual varieties, which would involve producing some non-commutative algebra, but you want to produce an invariant of manifolds that's valued in some quantum category and have all the structures that you'd expect there. So what's interesting, what I find interesting, is that those two questions have a common answer.
One question is generalizing A to these quantum groups, and what was the second question?
The second question is how to quantize these varieties but not individually as varieties, but to quantize the entire, there's this four-dimensional topological field theory that assigns sigma to this category of quasi-coherent sheaves. We want to construct some Q deformations, some quantizations of these categories.
Quantization means we use deformation theory. So it's not about making something non-commutative.
Well, no, it is. I mean, it is in the sense that the endomorphism algebras in here are some global sections of some algebra, so they are commutative algebras. When we turn on Q, they will become some non-commutative algebras. So we're Q deforming this category, but it's in the non-commutative direction. So I mean, to be even more explicit, if sigma is punctured, then these categories are just controlled by some commutative algebras, some affine varieties. If sigma is punctured, these are affine varieties. That carries a Poisson bracket, and I really want a non-commutative algebra who recovers that Poisson bracket. So I do mean in the sense of deformation quantization. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so to explain where this story is supposed to come from, I want to sort of talk about my favorite thing in mathematics, which is this thing called the diamond of degenerations. So this is just one of these sorts of structures. So at the bottom of the diamond, you have functions on the dual of the Lie algebra, and you have the Killing form, which lets you think of this equivalently as functions on the Lie algebra itself. Okay, and now we can quantize. So this carries a Poisson bracket, which when we quantize, gives us the universal enveloping algebra of G. And this we can think of as sort of functions in the formal neighborhood of the identity. And so we can sort of make this multiplicative and replace this with just functions on G. So we have a sort of formal completion process here and an associated graded process here. And something about quantum groups, which is really great, is that there's an algebra called the reflection equation algebra. It's a quantization of functions on G with respect to a certain Poisson bracket. And it also has a specialization which recovers you the universal enveloping algebra of G. So if this is new to you, this should be this is either familiar to you or should be astonishing, because I mean these are sort of dual Hopf algebras. They live on the opposite side of the room, but I'm really claiming that this single algebra, depending on this one parameter Q, actually interpolates between these two dual things. So people sometimes say that Hopf algebras are quantum groups are self-dual. And of course, this uses the Killing form. So I need to say that G is a reductive group and we've chosen a Killing form. Okay. And now what I want to say is that we can replicate this diamond in a bunch of other contexts. So if we're interested in I don't know what you mean by usual. There are two. There are. This is an algebra of matrix coefficients of finite dimensional representations. However, there are two possible products you could put on that structure, on that same vector space of matrix coefficients. So let me clarify. So you're asking a very important question. So I'll try to clarify. So there's an algebra called the FRT or RTT algebra, which is literally you take the quantum group UQG, you take its dual, the subalgebra of the dual generated by matrix coefficients, and this is this one. So in that sense, I think my answer to your question is yes, this is not the one that you would call the usual one. There's a sense in which this is a bad algebra, which is that it's an algebra in a certain tensor category, which is it's an algebra in this one. It has you have the left translation and the right translation action. Because you've used duals in the construction, there's an opposite here. And so it's an algebra in this category, meaning it has compatible left-right actions. The algebra that I'm studying is it's the same underlying vector space. It has the same specialization at Q equals one, but it quantizes a different Poisson bracket, and it's actually it's invariant for the adjoint action. So it lives in the in one copy of rep QG. So this one is not equivariant for the adjoint action. So if I want to do something about characters, it's not the right thing to use. Now, it is easy. If you like this one, then what I would say is you have some tensor functors here, which is one tensor functor is to use the braiding to turn this op back into a just rep QG, and then you use the tensor functor to map from here to here, and you push the algebra through. Maybe a picture I like. It's the exact same vector space. Yeah. Another way to say that is when you multiply some matrix coefficients like V dual tensor V, in here, if I want to multiply some matrix coefficients V dual tensor V with W dual tensor W, I just by fiat say that that the multiplication of these things is W dual tensor V dual V tensor W. I sort of forcibly move those past. So in this guy, what I do instead is I write V dual tensor V tensor W dual tensor W, and now I braid this past. Okay. And so as you can imagine, that makes the multiplication in here natural with respect to the quantum group, whereas this one, it's somehow unnatural. So this one is sort of biased towards the fiber functor, the vector spaces, if you like.
And which way it gets Hopf algebra, which is self-dual. Is it Hopf algebra?
It's a braided Hopf algebra. It's not self-dual as a Hopf algebra, but it has this nice property. Let me give briefly, I think this is worth, let me give one sort of glance at the relations to see why I said you should be skeptical of this algebra. So I'm just going to do an example of a relation in GL2 that occurs here. So a relation that occurs in GL2 is this one. Okay, so if I have the same sort of matrix coefficients for GL2, so these are the generators, and these generators don't quite commute; they commute up to this junk term. Okay, if I throw the junk term away, if I just violently set Q equals to one, then this just becomes a commutative algebra, and that one goes away. On the other hand, if I do the following thing, if I set Aij equals to delta ij plus h bar eij, where these are some new formal symbols. And if I set q squared actually equal to e to the h bar, and now I do a degeneration in the sense of formal degenerations, what's going to happen is that to first order, this relation, this is just sort of an exercise, this relation becomes the relation that E21 times E12 equals E12 E21 plus E11 minus E22. But this is just the Lie bracket. Sorry, E22 E11. This is just the Lie bracket of those two in the universal enveloping algebra. Okay, so it's not a mysterious thing. It's very concrete. This first order term just is the Lie bracket, and then there's higher order stuff, which of course goes away. Okay, so yeah, this is. I'm glad that we took some time to focus on this because this is the sort of source of the whole story, in some sense.
So just to clarify, the right squiggly arrow is just Q, just good old Q is one.
This is just plug in Q equals one, that's right.
And for the left one, you sort of put Q into this E to the H, and you have some way of regenerating H to zero.
Yeah, so I should clarify, a well-known story. This is called the classical degeneration, and this is called the quasi-classical degeneration. And this sort of thing appears quite a lot in different contexts, yeah. I'll give some more context, actually, where it shows up. So there's another diamond like this that I want to draw for you, which is I can look at the cotangent bundle to the Lie algebra. So that's just G cross G star. It, quantizing in this direction and in a similar spirit, this quantizes to the differential operators on G. In this direction, there's what sometimes goes by the name the multiplicative cotangent bundle, which is just two copies of G. Turns out that this carries a Poisson bracket, which degenerates to this one, and now there's a common object here, which is called dq of g, and is sometimes pronounced the quantum differential operators on g, or if you might prefer difference operators on g. Okay, so it has the property that it can degenerate to differential operators on the Lie algebra in the quasi-classical way. The exact same picture holds. And even more pleasingly, you have a map between these two diagrams, which are called moment maps. So if I take the derivative of the adjoint action, I get a homomorphism from U of G to D of G. I have the moment map, the classical moment map here. I have what's called a multiplicative moment map here. So that should be O, so that everything is in the same direction. This map on the level of functions is just the induced map, which sends a pair A comma B to its commutator. And that makes sense because this map here is a map which sends a pair to its commutator. Here, though, I mean in the group sense, and here I mean in the Lie algebra sense, and it's compatible there. And so something that I have spent some time studying is that there's quantum moment maps here as well. So this reflection equation algebra quantum group, it has just a homomorphism of algebra called DQG, and one wants to call that the quantum moment map. Okay, so it's something you can write down very explicitly. Okay, so now let me say then that what one wants to do then, you have these moment maps, and in each of these four contexts, there's a notion of Hamiltonian reduction that you can perform.
So what do you call dqg? What happens to it when you set q to 1?
When q, if you violently set q to 1, it just becomes functions on g cross g.
It's functions on g cross g, and
And the Poisson bracket becomes the Semenov-Chan-Shansky Poisson bracket.
And this map, this rightmost map, what is it?
This thing?
No, this one.
This one, yeah. So this is the map. So there's a map from G cross G to G, which is the commutator map. So it just sends a pair A B maps to A B A inverse B inverse.
So that's just the pullback.
And this is just the pullback of that on the level of functions. Let me point out, by the way, why is that sort of natural for us? This is just G cross G. This is the sort of character variety. This is the set of maps from pi 1 of a punctured torus to G, but we don't quotient out by conjugation. So that's just the claim that a punctured torus up to homotopy is just a bouquet of two spheres. So it's pi 1 is a free group. And so to give such a homomorphism, I just have to give a pair of elements G cross G. And as I'll explain in a minute, if I want to pass from this to the closed torus, I need to impose a relation, and it's a sort of well-known result of Alexeyev and some of his collaborators that involves this kind of map. You need to just force the commutator map to be one. Well, that's obvious just from knowing that pi 1 is commutative, but the fact that you can interpret this as a Hamiltonian reduction, they had to develop what it means to do group-valued Hamiltonian reduction. Okay. So that's a classical story. And now what I want to do is explain what happens when we do Hamiltonian reduction for each of these things. So Hamiltonian reduction produces for us a category which I just call DQG mod G. I'll say some more about how to think about this category throughout the talk. And it fits into this nice picture. Well, QC of T star G mod G. Okay, so so this is the sense in which this category that I want to talk to you about today, DQ G mod G, it's both a theory of characters for UQG in this sense, and it's also, the claim is that this actually does quantize the Atiyah-Goldman bracket on Atiyah-Bott-Goldman Poisson bracket on the character variety. Okay, and in fact, this thing makes sense on any surface. It doesn't matter that it's genus one. I just did genus one for some orientation and motivation. Okay, and then let me also say that there's something that goes under the name mirabolic. I'll say version. I learned today I shouldn't say degeneration, but there's a mirabolic version of this story whereby if we replace the cotangent bundle to G mod G, this gets replaced with a certain integrable system called the Calogero-Moser. Calogero-Moser system. This has a group analog called the Ruinart-Schneider system. This guy has a deformation which is called the rational Trenick algebra. And there's a common thing that sits here, which is also introduced by Trednik, is called the double affine Hecke algebra. And as I hopefully will explain, these appear when you do a sort of mirabolic version of this story. So they appear with all the structures.
In the bottom diagram, we have this diagonal algebras over there, diagonal categories.
That's a good point, yeah. So it turns out, so first of all, there's a mirabolic version of this which gives you categories. And then inside there's certain canonical, not quite generators, but some special objects in there that are highlighted by the theory. And their endomorphism algebras give you each of these things. So in the completely commutative cases, those highlighted objects are just the structure sheaves of the varieties. And so you're just taking global sections. Here, this is the Hamiltonian reduction, the quantum Hamiltonian reduction on some moment map given by the mirabolic, and here also this is a quantum Hamiltonian reduction algebra, but it just arises in endomorphisms of your favorite object. So it arises in the most natural way to go from categories to algebras by taking endomorphisms of some object. Yeah, no, that's a good question.
That's a good question. Well, yeah. There you have the map from G goes G to D star G.
It's not a map. This is meant to say you take formal neighborhoods. So if you take formal neighborhood at identity cross identity, it'll degenerate that. Yeah. Yeah. The squiggly arrows are just not strictly.
It's also the DQ of G mod G is the quantization of the character.
It's a DQ of G mod G is our quantization of the character variety of a closed torus.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the same sense, it's Hawking Montrop.
Indeed, yeah, in the same exact sense, yes, yes, yes. The construction is quite different, but we hope that it will.
It's also the quantum and the quantum.
Yes, but I think you consider this that right.
Yeah, that's if you want a TFT, if you want to have all the TFT formalism, then you really need to consider this as a category rather than just consider it. There's a certain algebra of global sections, which is very interesting and important to study, but the functoriality is at the level of categories, not at the level of algebras. So it's closely related to the.
You want modules.
Yes.
Just like sheaves on the commuting variety, which are covariant of the degenerate action, which is not the same as the degenerate action. I mean, if you think about the portion, there's a variety, the sheaves of that portion is not the same as the degenerate sheaves.
Yeah, the only extra data is you're remembering some stabilizers and you're doing things in a way that keeps track of stabilizers. Okay, so the starting point for the constructions that I want to give, there's sort of two tunnels that start on either end. So the first thing I... Yeah, so I mean, so DQ is just presented by some algebra, is an algebra presented by generators and relations. So yeah, thank you for asking that. So what I mean by construction is I want to give you an intrinsic topological construction that starts with a surface and produces some category, and that doesn't involve any choices, that doesn't involve choosing a presentation or a cutting diagram or anything, some universal construction. And I want this to be that universal construction applied to the torus. So I want to propose you, so this is the sense in which I want to quantize not just individual character varieties, which is something people have been doing since the 90s, but I want to quantize the entire TFT. So I want the entire package of topological symmetries to come along for the ride. So that's what I... That's what I mean when I say that I want to construct a quantum group version of this Kapustin-Witten 4D theory that has this nice description. For instance, I want three. Yeah, for instance, I would want that three dimension exactly. That I would want three dimensional cobordisms to give you functors. That whole package. Yes. Yeah. Precisely. That's the package that we want. Yeah. And as you know very many reasons why we would want that, I think. Yeah. So there's sort of two starting points for this. The first point that I want to make is that Benz V, Francis, and Nadler proved a result which is very close to home for Kevin and for Hero, among others, which is that there's something called the factorization homology, which I'll have to spend some time talking about. And if you take the factorization homology of the category rep G, so this is some invariant that you can assign, this is equivalent to the category of quasi-coherent sheaves on the character variety. Okay, so that's going to suggest that we want to do something with factorization homology. We want to understand this invariant. And on the other side of the room, with Adrien Brochet, so he's a brilliant postdoc who's looking for a job. With Adrien Brochet, we proved the following fact, which is that DQG, this algebra for the torus, DQG is a universal source of representations of the braid group of the punctured torus. Okay, and so by universal, what I mean is that there's some procedure that you can use to cook up representations of the braid group of this surface. So pi one of the configuration space of this. Yeah, so the braid group, the nth braid group of some surface, you take fundamental group of the n-fold configuration space of the surface. So you're just moving points around on the surface and you're looking at loops in that space. So what we did is we constructed some, so in my first paper I constructed some representations of this this braid group, starting with a DQG module. So you start with a module for this algebra, and you construct some representations just by generators and relations. And then, after I had done that, what's that?
For any n.
For any n, yeah. And these generalize the Reshetic and Tarai of braid group actions that are why people study quantum groups. So this is a sort of, just on the level of generators and relations, this is a sort of genus one version of the quantum group itself. And then what we showed with Adrien, it should be related to that. One thing to specify is Q is not a root of unity here. I don't know if that matters to you for these things, but yeah, it should be
conformed blocks.
It should be related to that, although that's not, as I say, this construction is sort of generation relations, but that's exactly the right place to be thinking about.
Does the dimension of the presentation match? So is unidimensional, or you can have a short representation?
The representations that you produce in this way will be finite dimensional, yeah. The modules that you start with will be infinite dimensional, but these representations are in a certain Hom space, which will always be a finite dimensional Hom space. So I think it's surely, related to the representations in WZW. But this is somehow a four-dimensional theory rather than a three-dimensional theory.
Dave, you must have just said this, but I think I missed it. So does this sentence to be taken as like, UQG is the universal source representations for the usual?
Yeah. DQG is to the punctured torus as UQG is to the plane. Yeah.
So you're talking about Hom spaces. You're saying somehow the category has some structure that adapts all the Homs.
Yeah, that's one way to say it, yeah. And when I say universal source, I mean if you had any other algebra whose category of modules had all that structure, then you would have a homomorphism from this algebra to that algebra, which controls those things. So it's a sort of universal thing. As a consequence of that, you know that DQG has a mapping class group action. Those mapping class group actions people also have introduced in the 90s or so. So there's lots of reasons to believe that this has some role to play here. Everything, our work and also the work of Alexeyev was all generators and relations. Right. You just proposed these algebras without just, yeah, right. By hand. Well, you need to anchor it, to say it's universal, you fix rep QG, you fix the quantum group, and you say that you want the braid group representations coming from moving points around in some little region of the plane. You want that, you fix that to be rep QG, and then you want a universal algebra that enhances rep QG and has these additional structures, yeah.
And so what did you say about this unit? So that this is true, Q is not
the unit? Yeah, everything I'm saying today is well-defined either when Q is a root of unity or when Q is not a root of unity. Distinguishes it from Resch-Tegentreyev theory. It's related to Resch-Tegentreyev theory, but it's somehow. Kevin, can you say the words that?
You said that so Q being root of unity, is it okay or is it not okay?
It is okay in many different ways for Q to be a root of unity. So the input to do this construction is just a braided tensor category, full stop. So that means if Q is generic, you have some construction. If Q is a root of unity, you have several constructions. So you can do the naive quantum group, you can do the Cazzo-Concini, you can do the modular reduction, and there's relationships between all the different things. They're different, but there's functors relating the different ones, yeah.
What is the one all the way around the functor?
Well, so that's the thing. So DQG, it turns out, has it has generators and relations, and the point is that the monodromy around a puncture is given universally by some expression in those generators. Just as when you send Q to one, you by definition you can think that the yeah exactly yeah. So the only thing the thing that one wants to do is see exactly what are the commutation relations that you need to put here to quantize the bracket. Okay. No. If you want this, I mean, it's really, really rigid. I mean, for instance, this is the universal one. So that means once you fix the quantum group, there's a unique thing like this.
So those generators in a particular computation would have some linear values.
So the representation theory of DQG is very interesting to study, but it's not. There's nothing simple you can say about it. I mean, it's an interesting infinite dimensional algebra. You can construct, I mean, part of the goal is to be able to construct representations of DQG the same way that you construct representations of D of G classically using geometric representation theory. So for instance, you might try to have some sort of, you know, take some kind of local system on G and do some, play some geometric games.
Can I explain my question?
Yeah.
One way to get the break group of the puncture torus, of course, would be that I look at it by the group of n plus 1 points on torus without puncture.
Yeah.
I fix the position of one of the points.
Yes, yes.
there will be like a closed generic function.
Mm-hmm.
But presumably, this is more general than that, right?
Yes, the description you're prescribing would be corresponding to taking some trivial DEQ module and taking the invariance there. And I think it would probably actually give you zero if you do that, because I think the modules that are trivial enough for that to produce the representation you suggested, when you take their invariance, it will just be the zero vector space. But I mean, you're touching on one thing, which is the Braid group representations that these things satisfy, they satisfy a kind of compatibility. As you add more and more points, you want some control over how the representations look, and it's easy to write down what that is. And it's necessary if you want to have this universal property.
So the phantom is unhappy. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we can talk more after. Okay, so let's see. What time am I supposed to stop? Like pretty soon, right?
We started at 11, so you have at least 15 minutes.
Okay, great. Okay, yeah. I don't know, somebody has to pick up, somebody has childcare or something to, okay. Okay, so all right. So I want to explain the tool now. So this is going to be a sort of tangent into some fundamental work of some other people, and I want to explain about factorization homology of surfaces.
So did you make the claim that factorization homology for DQG mod over punctured towards DQG mod?
Yeah. Thank you. So I forgot. So what we want to do now is we want to study. So the point now is to study RepQG over different surfaces, the factorization homology of the quantum group over different surfaces, and let me not make a rookie mistake by stating my theorems at the very end of the talk, and let me state that, so we have the following computations, which aren't well defined until I define them, but I'll still state them as some theorems. So these are theorems with Benz V and Brochet. If we integrate the annulus, if we integrate the quantum group over the annulus, what we get is the category, which I'd like to write OQ G mod G modules. And so this is the category of modules for that reflection equation algebra. So this is the RE algebra, the same one that appeared over there, which have some equivariance. Okay, so this is just a category of modules for this algebra to first approximation with some extra structure. If we look at the category of associated to a punctured torus in the same way, then we get the algebra DQG mod G modules.
N
is for the annulus, yeah. Yeah, I won't draw it because people tend to confuse it with the genus one surface, but the annulus, yeah. Yeah. And then finally, if we look at a closed torus, well, so there's two ways to think about this. So first of all, this is in some universal sense the trace of the category for the annulus. That's not a theorem. That just follows from the setup. So that's one way that we want to think about it, but we give that's useful for some things, but it's not a computation. We give a computation of it as this category of DQ G mod G modules. And let me just sketch right now. What's involved in this computation is basically you write a torus. You write a punctured torus.
Yeah, which is so really the same and so forth, a punctured torus.
The little shirt have a body.
I wrote the same. Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Good. So I'm going to leave that there, but I'm going to write weak here. Thank you. And strong here. That's an excellent point. Yeah. So if you have a D module, there's two dotions of an equivariant D module. There's one where the underlying vector bundle has an equivariant structure, but you don't impose any conditions on the monodromies, on the connections. And there's a strong notion where you have the equivariance condition and you ask that the connection be flat in the directions of the action. Okay. And so this is kind of just the obvious thing. It's a DQG module which has some G equivariance. And this is a more subtle thing where you have to impose this this condition that the that the
first one of the structure, the second one is broken.
Well, yeah, yes and no. Yeah, that's a good question. So yes, this is some structure. This is a property, except when you are talking about derived or higher categorical things, and then it's actually a little bit more of a structure. So basically, this is some intersection, and if you just mean the intersection, then it's a condition. If you mean the derived intersection, there's a little bit more detail. Yeah.
So I'm a little bit confused. So how is that compatible with your statement with negotiating? So before our point two, you actually had a concrete infinite dimensional algebra. You said was the universal thing where you not only have a representation of G, but also, you know, the action of the configuration space of points on that surface.
Yeah.
And so how are the, I guess I have no intuition over like G mod G D G V, but how is the compatible there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So basically this algebra, this category, in the case, so this is related to something we talked about I think yesterday, in the case of punctured surfaces, these categories should be thought of as being affine over BG. So classically, they are affine over BG. So it just means that you have some product of Gs, and you have a G action, and there's no more to the story. And so in this case, DQG modules is the same thing. DQG mod G mod, this category, is the same thing as modules for DQG, which are moreover equivariant for the group. But in fact, I can slightly correct something that Sasha said earlier, which is being equivariant here is actually a condition, even though it seems like a structure. And the reason for that is that any DQG module automatically has a lot of actions of UQG on it, just as any D of G module has a bunch of actions of the universal enveloping algebra, but using the moment map. And this is really just some category of locally finite modules for that action. So actually, this is a subcategory of the category of DQG modules, which has some equivariance condition on it.
Suppose Q is equal to 1.
Q equals 1, then the analogy is a little bit more complicated, yeah. But
what we just said doesn't work.
No, actually, I disagree with that statement because you're forgetting that G cross G is a Poisson variety. So, and that this moment map is the moment map here is a Poisson map. So, actually, just from having this moment map, it makes a sheaf on here. You have a universal map from G to vector fields on G cross G.
I guess what I meant probably was not that Q would not, but the generation of G.
Well, no, also for D of G, if I have a D module on the Lie algebra, then I have a homomorphism from U of G to D of G, so I can pull back that action and get a U of G module. And now I can just ask the question, is that a locally finite U of G module? Is it integrable?
That's strong equivariance.
No, I disagree. I think that the action, that the question that it be locally finite is weak equivarience. The question that the requirement that it be trivial is strong equivariance.
Okay. We can invariance means that have no compatibility at all with the variance and the vector field tension. So if you don't require any situation. I mean, equivariant G-modules means that it's equivariant just as it was in sheep, and there's no compatibility between G-module structure and equivariant.
Uh-huh.
So there's no way that we can recover the equivariant.
Maybe we can discuss later. I mean, to be precise, this just means the category of DQG modules in RepQG. And so that means that there are DQG modules I see. Sorry. As soon as I started to say it, I see what you... Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. Yes, absolutely. This is just DQG modules with an equivariance condition, and yeah, you're absolutely right. I apologize. And then the strong condition is that they be compatible. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But then you really cannot recover the equivariance.
Yes, I have to agree with you. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry, I got confused. Okay. So are we, so sorry for the confusion. Are we kind of clear on roughly these two definitions? Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Wow. Okay. So, all right. So let me say a little bit about what factorization homology is. I had this really nice slow thing planned, but let's see. So first of all, I'm only going to restrict to the case of dimension 2. And I'm only going to restrict to the case where usually factorization homology lands in some infinity category or something, and I'm only going to land in a certain two category of categories. So everything will be a bit more explicit than you can do in the most generality. So there's a category manifolds, which is, so the objects are just surfaces possibly with boundary. And the objects, sorry, and the morphisms. So sorry, let me say, if I want to allow boundary, I'll put a delta here, and if I want to allow marked points, I'll put a marked here. So otherwise, they're just open surfaces, and the morphisms are spaces of embeddings. So it's a category enriched in topological spaces of embeddings. So I have embeddings, isotopies between isotopies, and so on. Okay, and then I have disks sitting inside here. So these are just this is the category of so all the objects are disjoint unions of disks. Okay, and finally, there's a category sitting around called C, and this is some two category of K linear categories. With what's called the Deligne tensor product. So I really don't want there's a significant portion of the paper which is devoted to making sense of this category, but it's not so interesting for now. It's some collection of linear categories that you can tensor. And a basic observation, which is in various forms, goes back a long time, I don't know exactly to whom to cite this, is that if I have a functor from disk 2 to C, this is the same data as a braided tensor category. Okay, and the idea, I'm not quite sure how this reattaches. here we go. The idea is that you need to send the disk somewhere. This gets sent to your braided tensor category A. You need to send the inclusion of two disks into a bigger disk somewhere. This gets sent to a multiplication functor, A box A to A. And now you can move these disks around. And this gets sent to the braiding. So you have that much structure. And because you're working in just the two category of categories, all the higher stuff just dies. There's just no more structure you need to propose. So you have the tensor functor. You do have an associator, potentially. And then you have the braiding. So a disk 2 algebra is the same thing as a braided tensor category. And now the definition that I like the most of factorization homology, which is, I guess, I haven't been doing a great job with citations, but I think Lurie and Ayala Francis proposed, is you have this inclusion. A braided tensor category, it gives you a functor from C. And disks are dense in manifolds. You can cover any manifold by disks. And if you make sense of that precisely, then there's a sort of universal way to extend A to a functor on all manifolds. And this is called the factorization homology of the manifold with coefficients in the category. It's a sort of integral in some precise sense of the braided tensor category. So let me just say, I hope to have more time, but let me just say that there's a version with thank you. I should have been more clear. Yeah, by definition, it's an object in C, so that means that to any manifold, it attaches an object in C, which in our case is a category. So C is a collection of categories. So indeed, to any manifold, it attaches a category. To any embedding of manifolds, you have a functor. For any isotopy of those embeddings, you have some natural transformations, and it's all very. So the story I'm talking to you about is two-dimensional manifolds, but of course the general formalism works in arbitrary dimensions. One reason to focus on two-dimensional manifolds is that E3 algebras in categories, there's no interesting examples of E3 algebras in linear categories, and so this is where this story stops. Yeah, so of course.
The same as actually thinking to add, no.
The same as. It wants to be a four-dimensional topological field theory.
That's how it's given in terms of the data of a braided tensor category.
Yeah, so let me two category of linear categories, you cannot have an interesting example of an E3 algebra, because an E3 algebra in linear categories will just be an E infinity algebra. There's nothing derived in. Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. If you go to chains, then there's all sorts of things you can say. Yeah. So there's a collection of E2 algebras. They naturally form a four category, and so that's the sense in which this wants to be a four-dimensional TFT. And in fact, in the example that I've been talking about, RepQG, it is expected to be a three-dimensional TFT. It's expected to extend to three dimensions, and not quite to four dimensions. Certain four manifold invariants that you would expect diverge. They're infinite for obvious kind of reasons. Does that answer? Yeah. Okay. I was going to tell you a little bit more about how this is characterized, but let me just say the most important thing that you use about this is excision axiom, which was proved by Ayala and Francis. Which says that, first of all, if I have a manifold with boundary, and I pick any submanifold of the boundary. So I can either take a little interval on the boundary, and I can color that, or I can take the entire boundary and color that. Or of course, I could take a disjoint union of intervals if I like. So anytime that I choose some coloring of a little interval on the boundary, then the following things are true. So first of all, so call that P cross I, my little colored bit of boundary. So this thing is monoidal, is a tensor category. First of all, second thing is that the if I want to glue two manifolds together, still sticking to manifold with boundary, this thing is a module over P cross I. And that's just coming from the fact that I can topologically retract the collar and then glue in some more collar, and so I get a canonical action that way. And then finally, what goes by the name excision is that I'll stop writing the integral symbols here, is if I want to glue something together out of these, along these collars, then I can do that. I said I wouldn't. P cross I, so P is some submanifold. So P is either, in the case of surfaces, it's either just an interval, a sub-interval of the boundary circle, or it's the entire boundary circle,
okay.
And then I color that neighborhood. The point is, it is actually important to be able to do both intervals and the entire boundaries. It's much simpler to glue along intervals, it turns out. What's that? Irregular in what sense? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the factorization homology makes sense on stratified manifolds. Technically, I'm using it a little bit here, but you can do story with mark points and.
Things that quantize the space of Lattice connection with the regular
subplot. Yes and no. No, but there is a positive answer. Sasha's right, but there is a positive answer to your question. But it's a construction; it's not automatic.
Yes.
Which is, if you have some Stokes data,
yes.
Then you can write a Lie theoretic description of that Stokes data, as many people have done. And now you can try to quantize that data. You can try to cuneiform that moduli space of local data.
Yes.
And if you do it right, it will be what's called a braided module category, which is the structure that we want to associate to marked points. So to a marked point, there's a sort of categorical gadget called a braided module category. And a lot of the most recent paper is dedicated to making this more concrete. And so to give such a braided module category, you essentially, what you have to do is construct some algebra, and it has to have a quantum moment map from OQG. So that's the upshot of the story. So if you can quantize those local Stokes data, and if you can do it in such a way that it has a quantum moment map, which it will if you do it right, then you can do that those irregular things too. And that's actually, I suggested a student to work on that, but I don't know if she's going to. P is some little submanifold of the boundary, and then we want to collar it, and so we get a little P cross I here. So in this case, we have just a little interval. So we have I cross I, so we have this little square. And in this case, we have the entire boundary, so P is the entire S1, and then we have this little cylinder. Yeah. And so the point is we can glue along not only entire boundaries, but even little chunks of boundary. Okay, and I really probably, I'll just keep looking at Kevin until he.
What's his name?
I'll just keep looking your way until you tell me that I need to.
Well,
it's probably getting time to stop, right? Yeah.
Easy,
yeah. Okay.
I think
yeah. Why don't I just close up shop and say, well, basically, okay, so. So So there's a few basic computations that you have to do. One is you have to understand categories of disks with marked intervals along the boundary. And it's not hard to see that you can glue any punctured surface together out of these sorts of things by just taking more disks and gluing them together. So for instance, the punctured torus for us is we can think of as glued. We take two of these handles. So these are called handles. We take this other thing called a comb. And we want to glue this in, but we have to glue this here and this here. So the data that we need to prescribe is a disk with some marked points, but it doesn't matter what disk. We just take a disk with some marked points. We have as many marked points as we have here on the right. We have half that many other disks, and then we have some permutation from this set of size 2R to this set of size 2R, and we need to specify that. And so that data is called a handle and comb decomposition. And this decomposition together with this tells you that you've made some choices, but all that you're choosing is not the definition of the category, but how you want to present the category. So you're just choosing some particular way to present the category. And then from this, you get an algebra called AP. So P is the handle and comb decomposition, not the same P as there. And if we look at its category of modules in RepQG, then we prove that this is equivalent to the factorization homology of the corresponding surface. Okay, so you construct those algebras that people cared about in this way. And then finally, if we have a surface with boundary, then so this is the annulus category, and it's supposed to act on this category. And what we show is that you have a map from OQG, that's the algebra that you associated to the annulus. You have a map of algebras to this algebra AP, and that controls the action in the sense that acting by inserting annulus elements is just taking relative tensor product across this homomorphism. So it's not obvious, but it follows from something called Beck monadicity. So there's a Beck monadicity. So it's if you have categories with generators, then you can sort of write them as modules for some algebras. Here, these categories don't have generators, but they have generators relative to their boundary, meaning that there's some objects which don't generate, but when you tensor with enough A's, then they start to generate. And so once you have that, that's enough to get theorems like this. And then you have these theorems for both the annulus and the punctured surface, and so then you get these homomorphisms. And the point is that all the machinery of quantum Hamiltonian reduction, it's what's prescribed by the excision axiom. So it happens naturally rather than by fiat. Okay, thanks.
So is it right to say that the alternate theorem is the analog of this one, is that the Francis Nabi theorem? It seems like you have pieces of that, but did you ever write the full analog of that for any surface integral over any surface?
Well, okay, so that's yes and no. So I mean, we take this as a definition of our quantum theory of our quantum character variety,
okay.
And so. So then this can't be a theorem for us because it's automatic. What we want to say is that the thing that we compute really is a quantization of this, and the ways that you test that, they work. Yeah.
So these you have these cute algebras and they generate to what you'd expect.
Yes, and they're flat. The important technical thing is that they're flat deformations. So the underlying vector spaces are the same, and you really queue deformed things, and they act on module. If you have a Lagrangian in the original thing, it gives you some module, and you can play these kinds of games.
But the algebras weren't out there before.
No. I want to emphasize that for genus zero being OQG. And for genus 1 being DQG, these are celebrated things.
Right.
People weren't studying them as quantization. It's actually interesting. People were studying those algebras. And then Alexeyev has this very nice paper that went unnoticed in the 90s where he defines these quantizations by generators and relations. For any genus, he defines them. Strictly speaking, it's up to you whether it's for GLN or for any group because of the explicit presentation that's given. But morally, I think for you could say for any group. You can prove that that the algebras that we get associated to a given genus coincide with his algebras.
Oh, okay.
So they generalize it only in a very mild way. There are papers where you need to prove that you want his algebras to have mapping class group actions, and you need to do that by hand, and it's a bit tricky to do. And also, if you really want to construct three manifold invariants, if this fit into 3D TFT, those mapping class group actions would be there, but they're not quite enough to define three manifold invariants because you need it to be natural. What factorization homology gives you is a way of constructing it, which is natural, and then you go and you try to compare what you got to some explicit computations.
So one way of announcing this is you show that his thing actually comes in down with all this extra structure. I mean, sounds like that's one corollary of what you do in a sense.
You could say that in the three when you have the extension to three manifolds in place, yeah.
But so do you have an extension of this theorem by a genus or not?
Yes. This theorem is. This theorem, yes. So these categories, you can define them. You can explicitly compute these algebras for any genus by this sort of Handel and Combe decomposition, which you can always do, and then you can close up surfaces, and you can compute exactly what you get. Right?
So in other words, you're saying that computing genus one is sort of enough. Right?
Yeah, I would say knowing what it looks like in genus one is basically, yeah, I would say that gives you the feel for what it is, yeah. I should also say that, of course, these double affine Hecke algebras, they also were well known in the literature, and they have all kinds of phenomenological connections to torus and PSL2Z actions and things, but this explains where that comes from in some sense.
So is Daha also integral of some category?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Daha is an integral. If I take... if I take a torus with a marked point and I integrate this category of RepQG, and I have a certain one of these braided module categories that I mentioned. G is GLN. And I have what's called the Calogero-Moser or Mirabolic module category. So it's a particular module category that you can write down explicitly. Then there's an object in here. There's a canonical object in here whose endomorphism algebra is the spherical Daha. And you can prove that, by explicitly computing bases and seeing it. It's not some abstract thing. You really have to do it, yeah.
So if you have some big Dilemian functions and you tangle it, can you match to open control?
That is something that we would like to do, and I think it is I think it is doable.
You probably need to understand the integral of singularities a bit. To understand the triangle. Individual triangles.
Yeah, I mean the other thing that you need to really compare to Fakin-Gontrov is reduction of structure to Borel because his cluster varieties are you know. You have a puncture, and then you need some fixed flag associated to the puncture. So it's a bit of extra. So somehow, basically, I said that this thing was affine over BG. So it's affine except for a non-free group action. And I think one way you can think is that what Fakin-Gontrov do, they strictify the group action so that it's more free, and then they get some nice computations.
Yeah,
In my understanding of to get their coordinates, you need that, I could be mistaken about that. The short answer is yes, I think it should be related, but I don't exactly know how to do it. And I think there's some subtleties around this upper cluster sort of thing where you have to fix a...
What actually happens if you replace RepQ G with RepQ of the Borel?
That's a cool question. So RepQ of the Borel is exactly the sort of thing that you can put as a domain wall between G and T. Or in fact, if I have any parabolic and I have any levy, I can put a P as a domain wall between them. So notice RepQB is not a quantum group. It doesn't have a braiding. So it's only tensor. Yeah, but you know, it's a very nice question. So if I want to put something on a line and I want to play the same game, well, that needs to be E1. So it needs to be a monoidal, which RepQB is. There needs to be a functor from RepQG to RepQB, which there is. And then that functor needs to have a half braiding because I can glue things on the plane either before or after. And so I need a half braiding. And the technical or the well-known fact is that the quantum group, the R matrix for the quantum group, it lives in the Borel plus tensor the Borel minus. And that's enough to give you the half braidings for any parabolic, in fact. And so you get a domain wall to get determined by these. So that helps me to answer his question. I believe in Falk and Guntroff, in our language, you would say that they're not really looking at, they have a boundary. But it's not really a surface with boundary. You have G here, you have B here, and then you secretly have T, the color closing in the boundary. So that would be the right way to try to compare to Falk and Guntroff's picture.
Well, I think that's just on playing punch, right?
Yeah. Well, this mark, having a single puncture and marking it is, I mean, the same thing as having a boundary and this story. But the point is that to get their coordinates, you really want some.
You just basically like a collection of parabolic singular.
That sort of makes sense of
the topology. Okay, sorry. Yes.
Yeah, it has some additional. It is what you said, but it has some additional framing data, if you like. It has some framing data at the boundary, which we would call a. It has a fixed flag at the boundary.
David, again.
Okay. Thank you.